Thanks for coming back to WordBalloon.com, the pop culture conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we speak with DC writer Jeff Johns and explore his corner of the DC universe. Jeff's come a long way since his start in 2000 writing the miniseries Stars and Stripe to being handed the keys to the kingdom as a co-plotter of the entire mainstream line. Jeff gives us insights on his current run in Action Comics, co-writing Superman with film director Richard Donner, the continued success of the Teen Titans, Hal Jordan's new challenges as Green Lantern, the weekly series 52, December's Return of the Justice Society, and we'll look back at the Blade Spike TV series and the miniseries Infinite Crisis. Let's start with Green Lantern. I really enjoyed the last story as it wrapped up, and the problems of 1 year later still haven't been resolved. We don't understand why Hal is a marked man and had to go to deep space.
Yeah, that is the 1 year later aspect, the POW thing, the bounty hunter thing, is actually what we're going to tackle this coming arc. I guess the next arc issue starts with issue 14. It should be out. I mean, I haven't been done for a while, so it should be out any week, I hope. But it's something that I wanted to roll out slowly. I wanted to start out with 1 year later with a pretty big bang, and I thought Revenge of the Green Lanterns and throwing the core in there and Guy Gardner and having Hal really kind of come full circle and face some of the Green Lanterns he left for dead, and also return Arisha to the fold, because she's a great character, and the Green Lanterns, were everyone's taken away so much from the Green Lanterns, is putting some of the pieces back is what I've been wanting to do. A lot of it is new, like Sornik Natu and some of the other new recruits, but Arisha just kind of held a special place in Hal's heart and mine, so that's why we brought her back during that arc.
It's pretty cool that you've moved on to different female conflicts and possible relationships for Hal, as opposed to, you know, leaning on Carol. Carol's in the past, and you've got Arisha now back, and also the maverick little fly girl. I forget
her
name.
Cowgirl,
thank you.
Yeah, you know, again, I was talking to Pete. We were talking about this arc, and I said, hey, I'd love to bring Arisha back in the game. And we had talked about, you know, she had died in an issue of Guy Gardner Warrior. I know Bo Smith pretty well, and, you know, he was always like, well, she was going to come back anyway. But my point was, you know, Pete said, we brought enough characters back from the dead. And I said, you know, I know we have Pete, but look at the fact is the only Green Lanterns that have stayed dead have been two females.
Oh, and that's interesting.
It's just, you know, and so right away he's like, let's do it. And so we got to bring her back, which I was really excited about. And she's a fun character. You know, she's a great character. And the more female characters that Hal interacts with, I think the better. I think that character just should be caught between, you know, his triangle should be human girls, alien girls, extra-dimensional girls, whatever. it just makes it more fun, and it gives you more story potential and more situations. Like, I think the Green Lantern Corps is a very fun environment to be in, especially with their attitude against Hal Jordan and Earthmen in particular.
I also enjoyed Guy Gardner during that entire story, and also the resolution as well, that he's now in prime duty.
Yeah.
And you've you know, sprung board another, you know, couple stories, obviously, that will be addressed down the road.
Yeah, they'll be unfolding over the next year. Guy Gardner is probably one of everybody's favorite Lanterns. You either love him, hate him, but I think you'd love to hate him. and he's I think he's really grown into a pretty fantastic character since he's been introduced.
Is there coordination then between you got Howard Chaykin writing the miniseries right now of Guy Gardner, you've got Gibbons writing Green Lantern Corps? How much interaction do you have with the other two writers?
I have interaction with Dave a lot, but with Howard, I don't have much interaction, to be honest, with about Guy Gardner. I know Howard, and I'm sure it'll be great, but we haven't really talked about it, so that's up to editorial more than us.
Okay. I've noticed that your work on Superman has been very collaborative. And actually, in general, Jeff, it seems like there's a neat mentality going on in D.C. where maybe the germ of the idea starts with you and you pass it on to various people, whether it's Keith Champagne or, in the case of Jen Van Meter in JSA Classified, and, you know, to more direct collaboration with guys like Kurt Busiek and now with Richard Donner.
Yeah, I mean, the more direct collaborations are, like with Kurt on Superman, that was up and away, was a very enjoyable experience, and working with Donner, obviously, is a whole other level. But I like working with people. I like collaboration. 52 has been a blast because of that.
Yes.
And I think the book's better for it. Obviously, the book's better for it. I think everyone working on the book would agree. And all of us as writers, I think, are better for it, because we're learning from each other, like, what, you know, what does Grant do that, you know, because they're in your thought process all day. So you see how they work when we break a story, and you see how Greg approaches something and how Mark, you know, Mark looks at something, and you kind of take away a piece of that, and hopefully they learn that from you too, and you just get a different perspective of how you're approaching material and characters and story and drama and everything else.
I thought Jed Van Meter did a great job taking, you know, I think the seeds of what you started, I think, with JSA Classified, am I right?
Yeah, I mean, she did her own story, and it was terrific. There wasn't a whole lot, you know, the characters were laid out, I think, and chosen, but she really ran with it and did a great job.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I do want to get to 52, but I want to ask about Superman because
sure.
They're very different collaborations, obviously, and for very different purposes as well. And I want to start with Kurt because, and also I don't want to slight Alan's collaboration with you on JLA, which
oh,
I
yeah,
thought.
Oh, yeah, no, that was great. Again, these are all my friends, too, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, do you remember that back in high school I'd sit, you know, Friday nights, you know, before I discovered girls, I guess, would be, you know, I'd hang out with my friend and we'd just talk comics all night and come up with stories, and that was always more fun than sitting at home alone and coming up with
sure.
So, you know, it's like, I love writing. It's a great process, but I really do like, I like people more than I like writing.
Well, it sounds like and maybe I'm presuming this, but in the case of with Kurt, Kurt's an old vet and everything, he wasn't very comfortable with Superman, which I found kind of interesting until he said he wrote that Secret Identity story.
That's a great story.
Yeah, excellent story.
Yeah.
But this, you know, the year one story was so neat, and the characterization of Clark being Clark Kent, and it was just so nice to see Clark Kent action in business for a couple issues and tap into that side of Superman's character.
Yeah, I also thought that Kurt and I found a level of fun in the book that kind of helped bring Clark to life a little bit more. You know, people always want to paint him as, you know, in a certain corner or whatever, but since we got to focus on him so much, we got to see him experience his powers again for the first time,
mm-hmm.
enjoy his powers again for the first time, and struggle with the fact of, you know, they're coming back, what does this mean, what happens, what do I do, and having a support structure, you know, with Lois Lane and everyone around him, pushing him into the role he's born to be.
You know, it seemed, too, that some of your scene choices and some of the things that Clark would experience had kind of evoked that Weisinger era of, or those great Kurt Swan covers of the 60s, where you'd see something crazy like Clark trying to, you know, use the Green Lantern ring and being Clark while he was using it and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that was great, and I think you found a neat way of showing visuals that I think someone like me, you know, being an older reader can appreciate, but also putting a new twist on it.
Yeah, I think also you look at those old covers from the 60s and the 80-page giant stories and all that stuff, there was always, you'd always see a cover and, you know, it didn't matter what it was. A lot of them were goofy, but a lot of them were just intriguing.
Sure.
And you always wanted to find out, well, what is Superman's new power and what does, you know, why does Jimmy Olsen hate Superman now? Like, there was always something that compelled you to want to know about the story because everyone knows Superman and Jimmy Olsen and Lois Lane, and you know them so well that, in a strange way, those covers, they're all twists on the iconic nature of those characters and their relationships. Like, you'd see Lex Luthor being a superhero and Superman hiding behind a statue going, oh, my God, Lex Luthor's a superhero. And you want to know why and how. And I guess some of that, Kurt and I are big fans of that, and some of that is we want to evoke that into the Superman run.
Now, that reminds me of something I wanted to bring up about Green Lantern.
Sure.
And I'm glad that you're making such an interesting, strong support cast because I really think that Batman's supporting cast and Superman's supporting cast are really, and maybe Flash to a degree, but I really think that they're the only ones that are real household names where everyone knows who Alfred is and everyone understands who Jimmy, Perry, and Lois are. But,
yeah, I don't know if everyone understands Flash's, Flash's supporting cast. In my book, it was more the Rogues.
There you go. Well, that's true,
Linda.
Too.
But yeah, Green Lantern, I'm making an effort to build a supporting cast around him. I'm hoping Cowgirl is one that'll stick around. And then the rest of them are really his fellow cops, you know, Green Lantern, like mm-hmm. Green Lantern's got Gardner and Kilowog and Salak and the Guardians. And then we've got General Stone, who's, I guess, kind of like his Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're making an effort to flesh out Green Lantern and try and get some of these supporting cast characters to stick. I really hope Cowgirl does.
That's cool. Well, and that's a great thing, too, about 52 in general, because I think a lot of what were once considered second- and third-tier characters are really getting a chance.
yeah, I'm hoping, like, you know, we've got about five or six, I guess, main characters, and then a few, you know, a few other characters that are, they're kind of, you know, B stories, but still there. And I think if we even have, you know, two of them become A-listers, it'll be a great success, because it's really hard to have those characters break away. Like, you know, you look at the number of characters that can support an ongoing book in both DC and Marvel. There's a lot of characters they try over and over and over that just don't make it. And some of these characters in 52, I think Steel really should be a mainstay in the DC universe. He's a great character, and Black Adam should be a mainstay villain in the DC universe.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask about, because, and we talked about it before, your handle on Black Adam is just amazing, and it's fair to assume that you're I know everyone is working on every character.
Everybody's working on every character. I mean, obviously I'll gravitate towards Black Adam quite a bit.
Sure.
Everybody's working on every character.
Well, are there, I mean, and I don't know, obviously we don't know what's going to happen at the end of 52, but is Black Adam a character that you can find an infinite amount of stories from? Because you've really invigorated, I think, the Marvel Universe, taking nothing away from what Judd is doing now with the powers of Shazam.
Right.
But there, you know, Black Adam really means something very different now than what he did for all those decades.
Yeah, I think it started when Goyer and I were working with him on JSA, and we got to build him up through that and into 52 now. But I'm glad people respond to the character. I think he's a very complex character. The reason I think he works so well in the DC Universe, again, is that they don't really have, I can't really of another character that fits that role, that really has that kind of power and morality behind him.
Yeah, where you can appreciate where he's coming from, and it's not any, you know, again, I think, you know, yeah, he makes bad choices, and he makes really,
sure.
You know, and I was bummed to see Terra Man go, which I liked his NASCAR look. I thought that was great. Too bad it didn't last.
Yeah.
He's an interesting character, and certainly now. And I mean, this might dovetail with a combination of you and Rucka, just the things you can do with Kandak.
Sure. I think you can do Kandak, and it's not an analogy of the Iraq War, but it's a place where you can just have all sorts of stories about morale and
yes.
And what. You know, what's good and evil, because the reality of the world is there is no black and white. There just isn't. Black Adam represents that great gray area in the DC Universe that I think, you know, the DC Universe is much more black and white than the Marvel Universe. But with a character like Black Adam, he's right in the middle, and he's gone on both sides, and you can kind of see his point of view. And the way he protects his homeland, the way he approaches things, yes, they're sometimes extreme. And sometimes they're not. And you can see he's a real, you know, he's fallen in love with this girl, Isis, and there's a lot of other things coming up that will just completely continue to crack him open and humanize him even further.
And I think we saw a clue as to what's coming up in Teen Titans. I'll leave it at that.
Yes.
And let people check out recent issues of the Titans. And I want to get to the Titans. But while we're staying on 52, I want to stay on Black Adam and the Question, because there's a case where it seems like if this were a rock song, where this is you and Rucka jamming together, and we can hear both of you in that storyline. And it's so great to see the Question and Montoya, you know, bringing their street, you know, sense into Kandak and dealing with Black Adam's world. And it's really been a very interesting twist to the story.
Yeah, it's been fun. I mean, Greg's such a pro, and he has such a handle on those characters. I think he writes the best Question, you know, ever. But it has been a lot of fun. And, again, it's all about the collaborative process of the book, working with all the guys. And Greg's just, you know, again, he's one of the two other guys that I thank the powers that be every day when I wake up to work on 52 that I'm working with those guys.
So can you label who the other guys are in terms of, like, who's running the show on the Doc Magnus story, for example?
Well, I mean, sure you can.
Or if you don't want to, it's cool.
No, sure you can. You know, I don't know if I will. But
it's
everybody
all right.
Kind of takes point, but the point also changes. Like, certain things, you're like, okay, I'll take point on this, and then suddenly it'll evolve, and then, okay, I'll pass the baton off to Greg or Grant or Mark will pick it up, or vice versa. So, like, Mark and I jammed on a scene together for Booster Gold last week, just because we were both hanging out and we got talking about it. And we broke it quick, and it was solid. It was really good. and it was a lot of fun to do. And if we had gone off and done that scene separately, it would have taken me a week to break it, and it would have taken him a week to break it.
Are you understanding characters in a way that you never have before? I remember Wade said that working with you guys made him appreciate, and I can't remember specifically, or no, actually, I think it was even Adam Hughes that he said kind of gave him the handle on Wonder Woman that he never had before.
Yeah, I mean, Mark's kicking ass on those origins there because he is so concise, and that's all we want him to be. He's like just very concise. And
that's a tough gig, too, for
two
pages.
It is a tough gig, but you look at what he's done, and he's taken he takes the concept and he adds character to it. Every single story, I just read the Black Canary one, and it was terrific.
That's cool.
Every single origin story he's doing, it's only two pages long. You want to keep it pretty open. The art's beautiful, but he manages to get the character across so fast. I just love what he's doing. But it has made me appreciate the DC Universe more, the diversity within the DC Universe, because we're really hitting every corner from space to subspace. We're going to be,
going through
just about everything.
So we're going to learn finally what happens to Ray Palmer.
Well, we'll see what happens.
All right, very cool. See? Good. I like to open my presents on Christmas Day. That's all right, man. I respect that. Now let's talk about the Donner collaboration
sure.
on Action. Thank you very much for the preview, because it's an amazing story, and it's such a neat thing where you are obviously taking story ideas from the films and incorporating them into the DC Universe. And actually, I guess it started with Up, Up, and Away to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, we set up the Sunstone Crystal, which it's been used for a while, actually in the Superman mythology, just not so so prominently. But yeah, our Up, Up, and Away, we set up, the Fortress of Solitude. We thought it would be fun to have, if we're going to build a new one, let's have the look, and Donner obviously has certain things. I remember we were designing Jor-El, and he looked at Jor-El and he said, "Can he look like Marlon Brando?" And we actually know, because of legal issues, we can't make him look like Marlon Brando. So there's certain things that we're doing that echo the film a bit, and there's certain things that we're just having a completely different take on. But it is really, really fun to just sit down and talk to him about Superman. And he's been having a good time with it, because it's a different kind of creative process for him. He's so used to the films and talking about a comic and the pacing and everything else. I don't want to get into the first issue too much, but there's
sure.
something that happened to the first issue that originally, when we talked about breaking it, it happened at the very end. And then Donner was like, "Look, let's get this story going. Let's have it happen right up front." And then the story starts. And he was totally right. And he's all about story. Every scene's got to be about story and character. And he has, he's about heart, but he also wants stakes, And it's just a very enlightening and reinvigorating experience to be working with him on a comic book.
Does a script page have to end with a bang in the same way that a comic book page, usually does? That last panel is usually that compelling moment to make you turn the page. I know that scripts are usually like just a minute of dialogue. So
they are, but you never know how to time it.
Okay.
Because it depends. With action and dialogue on a screenplay, it's completely different. I remember when reading an article when they wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark, that every 10 minutes they had kind of a cliffhanger. So they said every 10 minutes was like a serialized movie, like the
right.
old movies. So you can time it out like that, but there's not like a specific end of a page reading it.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess that is what I mean when I say that. I guess there is that end of the scene where you obviously want to move on to the
yeah,
next
there's
scene.
Always a famous saying, and everyone who's been in a screenwriting class already knows it, but, you get in a scene late and you leave early.
Right. Okay. Now, does he buy into any of the new, like, McKee and any of that story stuff? Have you ever, like, talked to him about some of the, or are those really just new labels for really what just comes down to old-fashioned screenwriting?
I think they're probably old-fashioned screenwriting. I've never read the McKee book. I know a lot of people swear by it. I'll stick with the writer's journey. That's my Bible. That's what I really, really enjoy. I like that book quite a bit.
Stephen King or William Goldman? Or,
no,
John, that's
Vogler, Vogler.
And his first name again?
Christopher.
Christopher Vogler,
and,
okay.
And whenever I, it's based a lot on Joseph Campbell's hero stuff, but whenever you meet a lot of people who want to become writers, and I always tell them there's just two books I give them, is Shot by Shot, which is a directing book, but it really is, it's perfect for visualizing a story.
Okay.
And The Writer's Journey, which I think is you know, it's all you need. And then you really just need to start writing. You got to start writing. And I always tell everybody, if they want to be a writer, just write. You know, if you got a Batman idea, just write the Batman story.
Sure.
No one, you know, no one might ever, you might never sell it or print it, but it doesn't matter. The more you do it, the better you'll get at it.
I got you.
And it's a challenge. You know, I remember, I think everybody who wants to write that first script is always the hardest. You're like, how do I do it?
And that was Stars and Stripes for you.
Yeah, that was, and it took forever to write. And it probably went through 20 drafts, and still, you know, it was still very, very green.
Okay.
But, you know, but they get easier, and then, you know, and then you hit the next wall of, okay, these need to be better, and you got to, you know, you got to push yourself harder and just continually try and get better and learn from your mistakes.
With Richard Donner writing these scripts, how did that work? Did you guys get together at his office? Did you?
Just get together. We had, you know, we'll either have lunch or meet at his house or have dinner or whatever, and we'll talk about the story and kind of break it page by page, and then I'll go off and write the script and send it to him, and we'll talk about it and change it around a bit, and then give it to Adam, and then we'll change it a little bit more, and then Adam will draw it.
Adam's art is amazing.
It's fantastic, and if anyone hasn't seen the preview on entertainmentweekly.com, it's really, really stunning.
Yeah, it looks great. I really can't wait to...
Yeah, the coloring's fantastic, too.
Yeah, I'm digging the black and white, exactly. I look forward to the coloring as well.
Yeah, it's great.
And I've heard him say amazingly kind things about Adam Kubert's work as well, and how great everything looks, and he must be thrilled with the visuals as well.
Yeah, he can't believe it. You know, he saw the pencils and was blown away, and then we said, well, it gets colored. You know, and then he saw it and was really just shocked about how good it was, and it was fun because we got to spend some time with Adam and I, and Donner got to spend some time together in San Diego, and I think Adam had a real, real good time with him.
What does he think? Have you asked him in terms of, like, the, I don't know if it's generosity or just the decision by Bryan Singer to really emulate the Donner style in the first, you know, movie back? What did you ever, like, get his take on that? I mean, he must be thrilled.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess we didn't discuss it a whole lot, but, yeah, I guess he was very flattered, and he loves Bryan to death, and has known him for a long time because he did X-Men.
Sure, and, that's right.
You know, they were in a lot of communication over the course of the film, and I think he's just, you know, he's proud of Bryan more than anything else.
How long is the run going to be then on action for the two of you?
Right now it's open-ended. Originally we were just going to stick around for, you know, probably 12, but now we've got a lot of story ideas and they keep coming out, so we'll just be around, and, you know, right now it's open-ended.
Has he pulled a name or a character out of his ass that you're like, wow, where did that come from?
Not yet. So he does pull, like, characters from the movie.
Okay.
You know, it's really fun. But
like Miss Tessmacher is going to make her return.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he read comics. He read actually, we don't have any of that stuff coming up. But
okay.
He read comics when in the 40s and the 50s. So he's got a very, like, when he saw, I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. When I was working on JSA, in the beginning I was still working for Donner, and had a copy of the new issue on my desk, and Green Lantern, Alan Scott, was on it. He said, oh, it's Green Lantern. I said, how do you know that's Green Lantern? He goes, well, that's Green Lantern. And it's Green Lantern because when he was a kid, those are the comics he bought.
You bet.
He bought the 40s Green Lantern. And so his, you know, his stuff on Superman dates back to the very, very beginning stuff. And so he knows, I've educated him on a lot of the villains. He knows a few already. And because of when they worked on the movie, Brainiac, he's a big fan of Brainiac because I guess he'd done a lot of research, and we talked about him a lot when we were talking about trying to pitch for the new Superman movie way back when. Did a lot of research on Brainiac, so it's really fun to just get his take on these ideas and characters. Do you have an idea what's happening next?
Well, it's kind of interesting that you got, you know, a kid. I'm thinking, just because of what I heard or what I've seen as far as previews and stuff, that the kid might end up being a Bizarro or something like that.
Well, you'll see what happens.
Well, there you go. See, we can cut that out if I'm on the right track.
Sure.
Did you submit a script for the Superman Returns project?
No, we didn't. We talked about a story idea. This is way back before Bryan was involved.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was back when Tim Burton left the project.
Okay.
So it was in the late 90s, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell me about the Action Comics annual that's coming up.
All right. Well, we have an Action Comics annual coming up. and we got artists from a lot of great guys like Ragnar Morales and Joe Kubert's doing some stuff, and Art Adams. So it's kind of designed like those old 80-page giants.
Oh, that's cool.
We have several stories that pertain to actual stuff that we're setting up for our Action Comics run and happening during our story and stuff. But that's going to come out in January, and Adam Kubert did the cover with his dad, and it's just awesome.
You know, Joe Kubert always did the most interesting Superman, so I'm taking nothing away from the Sons, but it's always great to see the old man knock one out of the park, you know?
Yeah, he's great. He's really great. And we have a bunch of other guys that are going to be on the book. That Eric White's doing a story, which is
wow,
kind of old classic Clark Kent as a kid story, which I cannot wait for. He's one of my favorites out there. So it's going to be really fun to do, and we've got a lot of great artists lined up, and I want to do something. Again, it's fun, and it's more of a, you know, there's like this diagram of the new Fortress of Solitude in there, and there's like Superman's top 10 most wanted villains, and we really wanted to do like who these guys are and have those things where kids, you know, people used to pour over that stuff and just look at it and figure out what this is and who that is and make it a real experience instead of just a straight read. And that's kind of what the way we're approaching Action Comics is. Like, our fourth issue is going to be, and you know, part of it's going to be in 3D.
Oh, that's fun!
Yeah, come with 3D glasses, and the whole point of it is to make it more of an experience and a fun activity. You know, Action Comics. You know, it's we just wanted to make it a book that we're doing different things on beyond just writing art. We're trying different things to, you know, just make it something you look forward to going to every month and not knowing what the hell you're getting.
That's great. You know, it was the flagship title. It was the, you know, engine that started it all.
Yeah, and we want to make it that title again. We want to do things that nobody else is doing in that book, you know. I don't know the last time there was a 3D, mainstream 3D comic, and it's story-driven, too, which is even better.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it should be a lot of fun.
Put your glasses on now.
Exactly. There'll be a little icon that says, do it. You know, so that's going to be, you know, no pun intended, super fun. But, That's kind of our approach on Action Comics, is just to have a good time, and hopefully the reader will have a good time, too.
That's fantastic. And I'm really glad that both companies, I'll include Marvel in this as well, both companies have made the annual matter again.
Yeah, you know, if you're going to do it, let's. I remember when they did it back in the 90s, and, you know, they would just kind of do a crossover, and there would be, you know, teams on the annuals that you didn't really know, or, you know, it'd just be kind of a random story, and back in the 80s, the annuals were really important. Like, they were the cool culmination of storylines, and they were essential to the books, and that's kind of what we want to do with the Action Comics annual, and I think with annuals after this.
That's really neat. It seems now, more than ever, writers are working more in tandem with editors, and or at least the basic editorial philosophy that maybe wasn't there for several decades. You hear stories, and I think you can read between the lines that editors were really had a heavier hand in terms of allowing a script to be written.
Well, I think it's all dependent on the editor.
Okay.
I think everybody has had good and bad editorial experiences, and vice versa. The editorial has dealt with writers who are pleasant to work with and who aren't pleasant to work with. You know, and they're both valid. I think in a creative environment like comics, there's a lot of passion, and when there's a lot of passion, there'll be a lot of arguments. But there'll also be a lot of, you know, if you both come at it from the point of we want the best story told, you know, you'll be fine. But my experience is editorial. I've been very, very happy with the guys I've gotten to work with, like Steve Wacker and Peter Tomasi and Eddie Braganza and, you know, Idelson on Action Comics. It's been a lot of fun. And Tom Brevoort over at Marvel was great to work with.
That's cool.
So I haven't had, you know, there's certain editors I haven't enjoyed working with as much. I loved working with Joey Cavallari on Flash. That was one of the best times I've ever had.
That's cool.
And he was a great editor to work for. So I don't know if there's maybe it's different. I've been in the business, I guess, over 6 years now, 7 years. Yeah, just over 6 years. So I don't know what it was like before.
Sure. It just seems like, you know, they're more open to ideas. And maybe, again, that's just a perception.
Yeah, I think so. I think I don't know if they were, you know, never were either.
Okay.
I don't know. I couldn't say either way.
Yeah, I guess I got to ask, like, Englehart or somebody like that.
Yeah.
To compare,
you know, every editor has their ideas, and you get in arguments with everybody. There's certain things Dan does that I don't like. There's certain things that, you know, any editor does that you won't agree with or like. But it's a compromise because you're working with so many people.
I got you.
So some of that stuff, and then sometimes, you know, like on Green Lantern, you know, Peter and I kind of just do our thing. Nobody really bothers us. or says you have to do this or at this character, do that or that. We're just telling our story. And Action Comics is pretty much the same thing. You know, I collaborate with Kurt Busiek and Matt Eisen because he's working on the other Superman book, but it's a pleasant collaboration. You know, it's fun. And Justice Society, man, you know, when we first got that book, they just kind of kicked us this old box of Golden Age characters and said, good luck. and that's the philosophy is kind of the same with JSA, is that they just, you know, they just kind of let us do our thing, and it's great. But editorial has been, you know, really supportive. And working with the right editors and finding the people you kind of gel with is the key, I think, for everybody.
While we're on JSA, will we see a 1940s JSA story from you?
You know, not currently. There are no plans currently to do that.
Okay.
I'm going to stick with our monthly book. We're going to stay in the modern, or at least we're going to follow the modern team.
Okay.
But, look, if Darwin Cook would do a JSA story, I'd do it with him. Or Eric White, actually. I'd do it with him, too.
There you go. Well, yeah, because I think that's the one thing I'd really like to see a 1940s JSA story, just because I do. I mean, I love what you're doing. Don't get me wrong. I love the new stuff as well. But
yeah, the classic guys are great. I actually prefer the modern day characters because they're more diverse in age and powers and everything else. When you had a lot of mystery men in the 40s, but I love the original guys too. It'd be really fun. I actually have an Atom story I'd really, really like to do. A JSA story that revolves around the Atom.
That's cool. Al Pratt. Wow, that'd be neat.
He's one of my favorites.
That's cool. See, I'm an old Rex Tyler fan. I mean, I don't mind.
Rex is great.
I give you credit, honestly, because I hated Rick until your run on JSA.
Rick is fantastic, and I actually think he's even more interesting and different after with our new JSA launch. But, you know, there's a reason we brought Rex Tyler back in the book is we wanted to have one Golden Age there, like, just kind of retire and enjoy life and have his son there. So if he ever needs to throw the call back on and help his kid out, he can.
Yeah, that's the great thing about it. And also, I love Bedard's story that's going on right now in JSA Classified.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I actually like Tony's stuff quite a bit.
Me too. I wanted to ask also about Blade, because
sure.
I was really disappointed. I enjoyed the series, and it was really a nice summer series. There was some really good television, actually, for a change. And I thought Blade was one of those shows, and I was kind of disappointed that it looks like Spike's not renewing it.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the show got better and better, and I was really, really proud of it, and I'll be happy to have it on my, you know, on my shelf in the DVD collection. But, you know, that's the way it goes.
Okay.
But it was a great learning experience, and I love working with Gore. Again, it was working with people and that people I really liked and came away with some really good friends, you know, the actors and the writers and producers and stuff. So it was fun.
And I know you're turning your attention now to a project that you're working on with the Robot Chicken guys, which I think is fantastic.
Thanks. Yeah, we just closed the deal last week, and it's for Dimension Films, and it's going to be it's a feature movie I'm writing and directing with Matt Senreich over at the Robot Chicken Studios, and Seth Green's producing with us. It's totally different than anything I've ever done, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Is it that stop motion kind
okay.
of? Is it in that same format
yeah,
as Robot?
Stop motion, so we're going to have to build everything.
Wow.
Yeah, which would be fun.
Very Nick Park? Isn't that the Wallace and Gromit dude?
Yeah, it's going to be different style. We'll find our own range in there.
Well, yeah, I think there's two ends of the spectrum when you compare the Robot Chicken stuff with the Wallace and Gromit
stuff.
Yeah,
I think we'll probably end up somewhere in between with the tone.
Oh, okay.
You know, the project. It's not going to be too, you know, it's going to be very, I guess it's going to be a very family-friendly movie.
Okay.
And Robot Chicken on occasion cannot be.
No, I don't think so.
But it's damn good. It's damn funny. Those guys are hilarious.
No, it's a great show. Absolutely. It no, really and is. They're talented guys, so it'll be neat to see how they do with a PG or a G audience or whatever.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I hope so. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the Teen Titans, because I think since 1 year later, really interesting questions are still being answered, and it's a neat mystery, and also very interesting to see all these different Titans, that, you know, characters that, you know, no one has ever heard of before suddenly pop up.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, again, the whole point of 1 year later to me was like, okay, if I can't make Titans more interesting or a better book, then I shouldn't be on it anymore, and I really racked my brain and worked with Tony, and we came up with, like, you know, a tons of story ideas and different ways to go, and we thought we'd get, you know, we had a lot of stories that would be new and introduce new characters and new situations and also bring back a few familiar faces to the team. but it's been a blast. And I put all of that, the reason that it is so much fun is because I'm working with Tony on it. I mean, I'm taking characters like the Ravager and Kid Devil, who people are like, you know, who the hell is Kid Devil? And I think we've turned them into really viable characters. I'm really proud of what we've been doing with the book.
I wanted to talk about JSA. The big revival is coming up in December.
Yeah.
And I look forward to seeing what, you know, we've gotten a tease from the Alex Ross cover.
Yeah.
In terms of the lineup, is there any, are there more additions to come as well?
There are a few other characters that we didn't put on the cover just because we didn't want to
spoil it.
You know, it's a massive team, but we're kind of taking a Legion to Superheroes approach where we'll focus on certain characters and rotate the spotlight around. And really, it's a society, and we want to make it a true society. And again, introduce some new characters to the fold as well as dust a few other ones off.
Well, and I think you've made a few characters in particular, like Mr. Terrific, very important, and put them up in front of the DC Universe. And, I mean, you know, that's great. There's a character that I know had been, you know, introduced before. But
yeah, he appeared a handful of times in John Ostrander's Spectre.
Yes.
And we brought him over from that and really just focused in on him and, you know, to really propel him, made him the chairman. And I think he's just a fantastic character and one of my absolute favorites in the Justice Society and in the DC Universe. And it's really nice to see a character like... There are a lot of JSA characters, I think, that have kind of made the leap, and the Justice League Unlimited has helped us quite a bit. Like, Mr. Terrific has been very prominent in that, and Stargirl has been prominent in that. And I think the JSA has such a great wealth of characters. I always wonder why there was no Hourman in the Silver Age, and there was no Dr. Midnight in the Silver Age. They kind of never made the Silver Age versions of those characters. And so it's nice to see them flourish and grow. And look, the JSA, the first series, got through 87 issues, and now we're relaunching, and it's going to be a high-profile book, and who would have thought?
Well, it really was a high-profile book. There was really – I understand. I mean, maybe you guys – you were obviously very busy with 52, and
yeah.
Probably didn't have the time to really commit to the monthly. And
No, I had to leave. You know, I left the book, I guess, over a year ago now. I left the book over a year ago, and I just had to, strictly for schedule. And now with 52 winding down, it's the time. You know, it's time to. You know, we're getting close to the end of 52, and now I have my time back to really devote to JSA. But I didn't want to do it unless I could really make it a great book. And I just think the new series with Dale is going to be dynamite.
That's cool. Yeah, Dale Eaglesham is such a great heroic. James Bama almost kind of,
yeah.
You know, that iconic kind of hero artist.
Yeah, and, his the thing that really sold me on his art has always been emotion. His emotions are just, they're not stock. They're pure. They're from, you know, he takes that story that's on the script and he just delivers it in such an honest way. That's what I really gravitate towards.
You can tell, well, that really is a signature, I'd say, for most of your artists, whether it's Ethan Van Sciver, whether the Don Kramer and Len Kirk on the previous runs on JSA. There's a lot of emotion on a lot of your characters.
Yeah,
I think,
yeah.
A lot of
and
stories.
Then, you know, you've got Ivan Reis, who
yes?
can do about anything back on Green Lantern. Yeah, I'm very, very lucky and fortunate to work with the guys I'm working with.
You know, I wanted to ask a couple questions about 52 and Infinite Crisis, and not, I don't need to know the whys or whatever, but what I am curious about is, you know, and you're using it now in the stories, which I think is interesting. Nightwing was supposed to die. Or at least Dan DiDio didn't understand the need for a Nightwing, and he's been pretty public about that.
Yeah, you know, this is way back. It's got to be 2 years ago. And, you know, the thing that people think that, oh, my God, Nightwing was going to die until issue 6, and that was never the case. There was talk about him dying way back when, before issue 1 was even plotted or written. And Dan, you know, Dan didn't understand Nightwing, and everybody, you know, myself and Greg and everyone else really wanted Nightwing to be around because he's a fantastic character.
Yeah, and it's a big dog pile, too, because it was a bunch of you guys kind of jumping up from guys like Brad Meltzer as well from the outside, and even Paul Levitz.
Paul Levitz was, he was, you know, the buck stops with Paul Levitz.
Well, certainly.
Paul was like, no. And it was like, okay. And you know, none of us wanted to do it, and I think, you know, I was very, very against it, and you know, unfortunately, I had to offer up my sacrificial lamb, Superboy, to, you know, to placate him.
Is that true? Really? You know, one of them had to go.
You know what they wanted? They wanted a death. And
okay.
They wanted death at that moment, and it was between, you know, that moment
right.
was involving this kind of like the substitute Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman, which was Nightwing, Wonder Girl, and Superboy.
Sure, sure.
And he always wanted Nightwing to go, and we kept fighting against it. And so when we, you know, we knew that was kind of like Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman would be split apart, and it would be up to these guys to kind of save the universe and save the day. And so Superboy was chosen that way.
I see. Well, and I really am just curious, like, if you remember what frame of, not argument, but just, you know, in terms of trying to explain Nightwing, what words kind of made Dan go, oh, okay, I didn't realize he was that important and he served this role.
I think everybody kind of gave their opinion to it. And also, you know, it's like, look, my mom knows who Dick Grayson is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I've heard some people go, oh, they should have killed him, would have been a big death. And I just don't. There's no point in it, you know, because there's more story to get out of him.
No, I think you're right, and I think it's great that Marv Wolfman is you know, one of the guys that you guys tapped to.
I think it's fantastic, and I'm really looking forward to reading his run.
That issue you guys did, the Titans Annual, I mean, it was wonderful to hear Dick Grayson talking like Dick Grayson, and I mean, yeah, you certainly, Connell, you really kind of took that character and made him your own, and it was
really missed it before.
Yeah, I bet that's the thing, and I think you gave that character a new purpose, and his death did matter. I mean, he became an interesting character, and now I think, you know, fans do miss him as opposed to the snot he was when Reign of the Superman. I think.
Yeah, he was kind of bratty back then. I always liked him though, like Carl Kiesel and Tom Grumman. For me, man, that book was, when that book launched, that was one of my favorite books out there. It was just a fun book. And when I pitched Stars and Stripes, I always said it was a cross between Superboy and Starman.
That's cool.
You know, and that's the kind of the model I used.
I look forward to the new Starman dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very interesting character, and he's not what you expect at all.
Okay, cool.
Oh, anyway, back to Dick Grayson. Before we really got started, you know, that the idea was off the table, and I think Dan really wanted to find out why people cared about this character and why he was so important. And through Infinite Crisis, actually through that whole discussion, I even learned it more than I had previously thought. I just learned more about Nightwing and his place in DC Universe as I did before, and I put him, and he suddenly became the glue. Because you look at Nightwing, and he is the glue to the DC Universe. He walks between so many camps. He's the sidekick gone good. He is, you know, in Batman's world, in the Teen Titans world, in the Justice League's world. If anybody needs help, they'll go right to Nightwing. And he is kind of that pillar of, he's much more approachable than Superman. And he's kind of that, you know, that great, like, I don't know, that big brother in the DC Universe that nobody else fills.
Yeah, and I think that's neat. I think he went from being the little brother,
yep,
to now, yeah, one of the respected elders.
Yeah,
I love what Brad is doing in JLA, and I am curious. I know that you guys have said during the convention season that future stories are going to work in concert, and eventually we will see the JLA JSA team up of old.
Yeah, you're going to see the crossover. I think it's the first official crossover between JLA and JSA titles. I don't know if they've ever done a crossover before like that, where the two books actually had two books.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, you might be right. I mean, maybe All-Star Squadron back then and everything.
Yeah, maybe All-Star Squadron. but the crossover will happen early next year, so we're really psyched. And I love what Brad's doing, what he's got coming up. It's going to be a fun ride. But everything, like, we're laying on JSA, a lot of the stuff will pay off in the crossover.
Is Titans getting to the point now where it's going to have, like, just Justice Leaguers stopping by that used to be members? And, you know, I mean, there really is this roster of former members that have moved on and done other things.
Yeah, it's growing daily. I mean, we're expanding the Titans roster by 3 in 2 months.
Okay.
And then we're going to build up to Titans East for next year, and the rosters will shake out again after that. But yeah, you know, there's the Titans, again, it's like an ever-evolving, growing, you know, beast. The DC Universe is real, and it changes and goes past us, and it'll be here long after we're all dead.
Is there an area of the DC Universe that you haven't explored yet that you still are like, oh, give me the chance, and I would love to write this title or these characters?
The Bat Universe I haven't really gotten into, which is why I wanted to do All-Star Batgirl with J.G. Jones.
Right. Yes, let's talk about that.
That's just the opportunity came about, and I had a Batgirl story that I'd been working on already, and I love Barbara Gordon, so it just kind of fell into place, and JG and I had been wanting to do something for a while. So that's going to be a lot of fun, and but that probably won't happen for about, I guess, at least a year.
Okay.
But that's, you know, the one area, there's two areas actually, the Bat universe I'd really like to get into, and, you know, eventually someday Justice League would be a lot of fun to do. The areas I don't really get are, like, the New Gods. I never really got super involved in their world. I really look forward to what's, you know, what they're going to do with it, because it'll be, you know, it'll be the first time I think I actually really get into it, I hope. But there's a lot of places in the DC universe I'd love to jump into. I'd love to do Doom Patrol monthly. They were really fun writing the Titans.
And I wanted to talk about that because that was a really great story in Titans, and I think a very clarifying way where, man, again, as an older reader, it's you got to the essence of those characters.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, the characters all are already there. It's just a matter of putting them in a room and having them act a little crazy.
Yeah.
And they're the only superhero team that does that. You know, like Mento is mental.
Yeah.
You know, and his helmet fritzes out, and he puts it on, and he can write books and novels, and his thought process is completely bizarre. Robot Man's a great character. He's, you know, he's Ben Grimm and Rex Mason and all those guys kind of fall in the same camp and Wildcat. And you've got Elastigirl, who psychologically is more devastated than a lot of those guys, and Negative Man, who's just a bizarre character, and the Chief, who's, you know, a sick bastard. And I think they're great. What a great group of characters.
And I love that twist on the Chief. Because
Chief, that grew out of something Grant had already started playing with in his run.
Okay.
And I just kind of personified it a little bit more and really used it to illustrate, you know, that both, the Doom Patrol is, it appears to be a family, but really they're very dysfunctional, and it's okay. They need work, just like the Titans are very dysfunctional. They need work, too. One team's not better than the other, and it's okay to struggle. And that's really what the storyline was about.
And your take, and it's funny, because I remember either in our conversation or I just saw you at a panel or something, but just that great relationship between Mishra, Mala, and the Brain.
I love those guys. And again, that's something, you know, Grant sparked, and I just kept going along with what he had set up, and it was just a lot of fun. I'm a massive fan of Grant's run on Doom Patrol, and so I took a lot of what he did and sprinkled it with some of what the original, and then tried to add a new layer on there myself, and I think I think it worked out pretty well.
The stuff that Grant is doing right now in All-Star Superman is right up there.
Fantastic.
And it's funny because I think in a way you guys are tapping into that same thing with mainstream Superman, much like what I said about the glowing, you know, Clark Kent being green. But it's that appreciation for the goofy stuff and making it work today.
Yeah, it's, you know, we don't want a goofy book, but you want a fun book.
Right.
And there's a difference, and there's a fine line sometimes, and you know, but Superman isn't Wolverine. He's not going to go around and claw people in half, and you don't really want him to. You want him to get mad and fight and kick some ass, and he's got to do that. But at the same time, Superman books have to be fun and colorful and you know, enjoyable and optimistic, because that's what Superman is. But it's been a lot of fun to tap into. You know, I grew up reading the old 60s comics because of my uncle, and when I go to my grandmother's house, I pull his old box of comics out, and they're all checkerboard DCs.
Sure.
And I loved that old stuff, and the Superman and Jimmy Olsen's and Lois Lane's were always the most interesting to me because they had these crazy, bizarre stories, and you never knew what was going to happen. You know, I mean, we have, I really want to do an imaginary story at some point in Action Comics. I just think that would be fun.
Sure.
But to do, again, to do it kind of modern and not, you know, don't do it silly. You can have it fun, but have real stakes and have it affect the characters and have it become a story about the characters instead of a gimmick. And it's been a lot of fun to tap into that stuff.
Now, it's Kurt and Fabian still on the other Superman book?
It's just Kurt.
Oh, it is just Kurt now.
Carlos.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Carlos Pacheco. Okay.
Yep.
Very cool.
And his stuff looks beautiful, man.
You bet. He started already. Isn't he doing the story with Fabian?
He did the Action Comics for three issues between Up, Up, and Away and our first issue, Donner and I's first issue.
I see. Okay, because I knew I saw him recently on Superman.
Yeah, he did that action run.
Very cool. I did want to talk about Batgirl because,
sure.
You know, that was always an interesting debut. It came during that Infantino time when Julie Schwartz had just taken over the Bat titles. and there were some weird things going on in the Batman universe, and she was thrown in the mix. And I always forget, was she created for the series first?
She was created, from what I understand, she was created for the television show and put in the comic book.
Okay.
You know, the simple fact is Commissioner Gordon's daughter wants to become Batgirl, and she becomes Batgirl. It's a great story idea. It's just a great idea because everybody knows who Commissioner Gordon is and the relationship between him and Batman. And what is Batman's reaction when he finds out Gordon's daughter is Batgirl? I mean, there's so much story there. And really a lot of that is what we want to explore is this young girl breaking up the boys' club, essentially, and trying to find out why is her dad so fascinated with this Bat character. And it's about a daughter and a father reconnecting, and it's, you know, it's about a conspiracy within Gotham City, and it's about, you know, why the supervillains put on masks, and it's all about the, you know, it's about a lot of things, but it's all about really this, at the end of the day, it's about this girl who's just trying to reconnect with her father, and that's why I like the story so much.
Oh, you know, you didn't mention your new series with Vance Kiver. Is that still under wraps?
Oh yeah, it'll be out. You know, it's a project Ethan and I are doing that I equate to Flash Iron Heights, like what we did with that.
But very
it's
cool.
Green Lantern universe, and it's going to hit probably around April or May. And I'm really excited to work with Ethan on Green Lantern again. That, you know, that kid was born to draw Green Lantern, and he completely changed the way people approach the character in Rebirth.
Yes,
on a visual standpoint, and you know, he and I are going to have a lot of fun. We always have a good time working together, and we're always, especially when we're working with villains, and this thing obviously involves Sinestro, so we're very much looking forward to it. And we've already got the whole story kind of laid out, and we'll probably start on it pretty soon.
Very cool.
Yeah, but that's going to be a lot of fun. Ethan's just a gas. Have you had him on your show?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had him on, and actually I you know, been looking forward to having him on again, and, you know.
Yeah, he's ridiculously funny, and he's a genius on so many levels.
Well,
and the way he approaches characters and the love he has for the characters is so evident.
Well, he summed up that whole Denny O'Neill moment of, you know, when the older gentleman asks, hey, you know, you take care of the purple people and the orange skin people, what do you do for the black people? And Ethan's like, how about saving your ass every time something comes from outer space to attack the Earth? And it's like, okay, there you go. Thank you, right. Ethan.
That's another answer.
What were you going to say about Ethan? And
he's just a fun guy. Anyone who's worked with him knows that. You know, we always talk about, like, I mean, I really want to chain him to me because I'm such a huge fan of his artwork, and we really connect whenever we talk, and we really connect on a tone level, on a script level, and kind of a conceptual level, and we've talked about our dream projects. Like, we'd love to do Ghost Rider, like do to Ghost Rider what we did to Green Lantern. I think that would be like a dream someday.
That's cool.
Yeah. But he's really great.
Did you win anything at that Spike Awards?
No, I wasn't nominated. I just went because I worked for Spike, and
sure.
I'm friends with all the executives over there, so they invited me over, and the whole Blade crew was there.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was actually, the awards was fun. The party was a lot more fun.
Well, I'm sure.
The party was fantastic. It was at the Roosevelt Hotel in Hollywood, and it was just an amazing, amazing spread. It was really fantastic. It's probably the best after party I've ever been to.
I should ask about 52 and say, where are you guys in terms of writing? Have you guys finished writing the scripts?
Oh, we'll be done soon, very, very soon.
Wow.
Yeah, we'll be done very soon. It's all plotted and everything's going, and we're very happy with how it's looking and shaping up, and I'm really excited about it. It's fun to be part of a project like this that's so experimental, and people are going to remember 52. They're just going to remember that experience, and I really have high hopes that, you know, we're going to end on a very positive note.
That's cool, and there haven't been any bad forks in the road in terms of just hassles or screw-ups or anything like that. Everything's moving
pretty smooth.
Trains are on time.
Switching editors midway through.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. Thank you.
Well, even as Kurt Busiek said, Watchmen didn't have the same editor all the way through, and neither did Dark Knight Returns.
I didn't know that. Len Wein didn't do Watchmen all the way through?
Not all the way through.
Wow.
So
tell me about the new guy. Yeah, because, I mean, everyone...
Wein's fantastic. He's been my assistant editor on Green Lantern for a long time, and he's been working under Pete Tomasi and Steve Wacker for a long time, and Mike Carlin, so... He's got the skills and the knowledge, and he's a great guy. He's, you know, it wasn't, you know, I hate losing Steve, but
sure.
He's fantastic, and good luck to him, and you know, and we'll still go out and get drunk together, but as we do, but Mike is terrific, and he stepped right up, and we're, you know, it's a well-oiled machine, and we're so far into the game that really it's just it's a matter of staying on course and finishing up, so we're good.
That's cool. And was Jan Jones also involved in an editorial capacity on 52?
A little bit. Mostly it was all Steve and then...
And now Michael.
And then Michael, but yeah, Jan was there, and Janine Schaefer, too, also.
Okay. And, I got to tell you, I it's funny because so many of these big stories end up becoming novelizations, and I think you're going to need at least a trilogy to get through 52 if you want to really put it in books.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they'll separate by character, or I don't know. I don't know what they'll do. It'd be great. It'd be great to see something. I'd like to see something come out of 52. Whether they're doing action figure lines, but it'd be great to see like an animated movie or a set of novels or something. It's a lot of fun, and it's such a complex story, and all these things start tying together soon. People are going to see the tapestry behind it.
Well, and that was the other thing I was going to ask, because as we're speaking, we're not quite yet at the halfway point. We're close.
Right.
And I'm wondering, are there still things that have to be introduced without getting into specifics?
There are certain elements that will be introduced.
Certainly twists, I'm sure, are coming.
Yeah, well, twists will continue on going, but there are a lot of elements that will be introduced, and stories, we'll keep moving forward, but I guess you can expect to see some, it really starts to ramp up in terms of the twists and turns, I think, because all of them start to hit. We've got a lot of, you got like five or six stories going,
yeah,
and now we're all reaching, the kind of the act two point and what things are going to go left and right and up and down.
Are there moments of crazy that came from somebody other than Grant Morrison? Because...
Yeah. Yes, there are.
I mean that just
we've all tapped into our inner
your inner Grant,
our inner dream child, I guess, and pulled crazy ideas out of our heads, and it's been a lot of fun to do that. There's scenes in there I think probably people thought Grant wrote that Greg wrote, and scenes that that Mark wrote that they thought I wrote, and vice versa. Like all
sure.
There's I've already seen people guess completely wrong, and it's been a lot of fun because I think we're all utilizing each other's strengths to try and up our own game and take it back to our books. After this experience is over, and I'm almost sad thinking about it, but after this experience is over, we want to go out and we're still a team. We're going to go out and do some other things, and I want to carry all the positive experiences I have with Grant and Mark and Greg over into my writing over on Green Lantern and Action Comics and Justice Society. I really want to get those books to the A-plus level and become a better writer and put it in everything I do. And I'll use it in the movie I'm doing, too. Everything, it's a skill set and it's storytelling, and everything I've learned from these guys, I'm going to carry on for the rest of my writing career. And that's something that's not going to happen again.
That's cool. And I wondered about, any possible... You just did the essay question in terms of, like, explaining, obviously, the things that you can take away no matter who you work with next or even on your own. As far as your writing. But I am curious about that fine line between, wow, that was amazing, and then let's try and make lightning strike twice. And I can appreciate, what's the rumble in the executive offices? And they got to be thrilled with the response to 52 and the idea of a weekly comic. But when you get right down to it, you guys got heavy hitters on art and writing. And it has taken such a long time. It's taken you guys off of regular monthly books as well.
Oh, sure. I mean, right now I'm only doing Green Lantern and Teen Titans.
Sure.
I think people think I'm a lot busier than I am because we've got 52 coming out. But, for about 6 months, all I was doing was 52 and Green Lantern and Teen Titans. And now that 52 is wrapping up, I can go back to JSA and I can launch Action Comics.
Sure.
And, it is... It's been, so far it's been a really solid success for DC.
To the point where they might try and think of, okay, what's the next weekly event?
I don't know. I mean, we won't be doing it. I'll tell you that much. We did it. I'm very happy with how it's turning out. I'm very happy with the effects it'll have on the DC universe after all is said and done. It's a great crew. But, we don't want to try it again because we've done it. Now we're going to go on and do different things. But that doesn't mean we're not all four of us aren't going to work together in the future.
I want to ask about the way Infinite Crisis had to end in terms of making the schedule.
Sure.
Can you talk about what's being done for the eventual trade? And
sure, the hardcover came out last week.
Oh, okay. Well, I see. I didn't even see it.
Yeah.
So it's is the art been fixed and everything? Or
well, yeah. You know, it's really unfortunate. You know, Phil and I were in Australia for 2 weeks prior to shipping, and the choice they made to release the art, and really, it's two spreads that I think they took shortcuts on. They obviously did. It's the opening one where they just kind of, you know, colored it red.
Yeah, when everyone's fighting, yeah.
Yeah, where everyone's fighting. And, in my opinion, it's detrimental to the opening of the book, because the first thing you see in that Metropolis fight is something that just doesn't look like it's finished.
Right.
And it was a decision that was made, you know, without consulting us. And I'm not going to complain and whine and moan or anything, but it's, you know, it's obviously not very happy about it.
Sure.
And the second decision is, you know, the spread at the end was always going to be drawn by Phil, and I thought it was really important. And, you know, Joe Bennett's great, but he was busy on 52, and, you know, the idea of a spread of 80 heroes is just, it suits somebody like Phil and George so much better, because that's what they do.
Sure.
You know, as much as I like Bennett and what he's doing on 52. So I'm really happy that we were given, you know, giving, I guess, the funding and everything to go back and do it how we wanted to do it.
That's cool.
And that, you know, that to me, I'm really proud of that hardcover. I think it looks great. And that was, you know, scheduling was always a nightmare on these things, you know, ask Marvel. But that's, you know, and that's me being completely candid and honest about the entire situation.
No, I understand.
And I very rarely talk about behind-the-scenes stuff, but that's it.
Well, I appreciate that. The only other question I wanted to ask about the writing of Infinite Crisis is, it just seemed to me that 12 issues would have really given you, obviously, so much more time to explore so many neat things about the story, because you really did have a great handle on a lot of these interesting characters that, you know, only came back for this story, especially, you know, the four that were trapped in limbo.
Sure.
I told you, because we had spoken right after the first conversation that the Golden Age Superman has with Batman. The fan in me couldn't help but say, you need like 10 more scenes like that. And I understand that stamped who the character was and how he could cut to the core of the Earth One heroes, despite the fact that they don't remember knowing him. But it's just like, oh, man, if only you had a little more time and a few more issues.
Yeah, you know, that issue, I mean, look, that series could have been 1,000 pages, you know, because of all the material that was,
sure,
you know, that was asked to be put in there, and all the story with the characters and everything else is, it really could have been, you know, 12 issues, 18 issues. It's one of those rare moments, I think, when you see a series that, you know, it isn't padded at all. Like, everything we did, it was all story, like, you know, in there. And if, you know, if we had had 12 issues, sure, I would have spent more time on everything. But again, I'm happy with what we did with the pages allotted.
Would you ever want to, like, is there going to be a novelization of Infinite Crisis?
They did a novelization. I haven't read it. I've never spoke with the author, so I'd be curious to see what they did.
Okay. Man, I've missed every Infinite Crisis, like, spinoff, haven't I?
Yeah.
Well, I bought the issues.
Cool. It was a fun project, and at the end of the day, I'm happy with it.
Well, I appreciate your time today.
Sure.
And thank you for a very fun conversation, as always.
Absolutely. Yeah, anytime, man.
And I always look forward to the new stories that are coming out.
Thanks for being thought-provoking.
Well, good God, I hope I actually was for a change. That's good.
You were.
Well, that's good, man. I feel
for
like...
a change.
Always happy to talk to Jeff Johns. Make sure you check out his books, Action Comics, co-written with Richard Donner, the monthly Teen Titans and Green Lantern, and the weekly 52, and coming in December, The Return of the Justice Society of America. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, if you ever have any questions or comments on the show, you can always reach me by email, john@wordballoon.com. There's also our MySpace page, which is myspace.com/wordballoon. And you can find us at all the various iTunes and Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, Podnova, Odeo, you name it, we're there. So thanks to our subscribers and people who vote for us on the various podcast sites. More new episodes are coming up. Keep checking our website, wordballoon.com, for updates on upcoming episodes. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2006. Talk to you next time.